Welcome to Zichud Daf Siman. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldhar, and today we're Masechus Erevin Daf Pei Beis. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, the opening mission, the eighth parak, discusses setting up a communal eruv tchumim and states, "V'kol shekibo olam ba'od yom mutter." It's permitted to be used by whomever accepted to have his makom shvisa at the site of the eruv while it's still day. But if he only accepted it after dark, he's prohibited, for one cannot make an eruv after dark. The Gemara suggests that the ruling that the eruv must be accepted while it's still day implies ein brera. There's no retroactive clarification, because if there was brera, the person can say after dark that the eruv was retroactively acceptable to him while it's still daytime. Rav Ashi rejects his proof, saying that the Mishnah was distinguishing between hodiuhu v'lo hodiuhu, a case where the makers of the eruv informed him of the existence of the eruv, and where they did not inform him. Rav Ashi explains that brera can only retroactively clarify when the potential for clarification existed. In this case, the person had no knowledge of the eruv until Shabbos began. Point number two, Rav Ashi said, "Katan ben shesh yotze be'erev imo." A child, even in the sixth year, can fulfill his obligation to make an erev with his mother's erev. Rashi explains that she doesn't need to formally give the child ownership of the erev, as the child is considered a part of her, and it's assumed that she had the child in mind since he cannot be without her. And point number three, the next Mishnah says, "Kama hu shiur." What is the quantity required for eruv tchumin? Mazon shtei seudos kol echad ve'echad. Food for two meals for each and every person who wants to participate in the erev. Rav Meir says, "Mazonu l'chol v'lo l'Shabbos." The quantity of food for weekday meals, not Shabbos meals. Yudah said, "L'Shabbos v'lo l'chol," for Shabbos meals and not for weekday meals. "V'zeh v'zeh miskavni l'hakel," and both intend to rule leniently, meaning it's determined by the meal which is smaller. Rashi explains that Rav Meir holds that people eat more at Shabbos meals because of the tastiness of the food, whereas Rav Yehuda holds that people eat less at Shabbos meals because they eat three sudos on Shabbos. Rav Yosef asks Rav Yosef Breda Rav, whose view does his father accept? And he answered that Rav accepted Rabbi Meir's opinion of weekday meals. Rav Yosef said that he too accepts Rabbi Meir's opinion, for if one accepted Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that a Shabbos meal is smaller than a weekday meal, then there's difficulty with the popular saying, "Rav chol b'sima shchiach." It, referring to the stomach, leaves room for a tasty dish, which lends credence to the notion that people eat more on Shabbos because of the tastiness of the food. So once again, the three points are: number one, the opening mission, the eighth parak, discusses setting up communal eruv tchumim and states, "V'kol shekibo olam ba'od yom mutter." It's permitted to be used by whoever accepted to have his makom shvisa at the site of the eruv while it's still day, but if he only accepted it after dark, he's prohibited, for one cannot make an eruv after dark. The Gemara suggests that the ruling that the eruv must be accepted while it's still day implies ein brera. There's no retroactive clarification, because if there was brera, the person could say after dark that the eruv was retroactively acceptable to him while it was still daytime. Rav Ashi rejects this proof, saying that the Mishnah was distinguishing between hodiuhu v'lo hodiuhu, a case where the makers of the eruv informed him of the existence of the eruv and where they did not inform him. Rashi explains that brera can only retroactively clarify when the potential for clarification existed. In this case, the person had no knowledge of the eruv until Shabbos began. Point number two, Rav Ashi said, "Katan ben shesh yotze be'erev imo." A child, even in his sixth year, can fulfill his obligation to make an eruv with his mother's eruv. Rashi explains that she doesn't need to formally give the child ownership of the eruv, as the child is considered a part of her, and it's assumed that she had the child in mind since he cannot be without her. And point number three, the next Mishnah asks, "Kama hu shi'ura." What's the quantity required for eruv tchumim? Mazon shtei seudos kol echad ve'echad. Food for two meals for each and every person who want to participate in the eruv. Rav Meir says, "Mazonu l'chol v'lo l'Shabbos." The quantity of food for weekday meals, not Shabbos meals. Rav Yehuda said, "L'Shabbos v'lo l'chol," for Shabbos meals and not for weekday meals. "V'zeh v'zeh miskavni l'hakel," and both intend to rule leniently, meaning it's determined by the meal which is smaller. Rashi explains that Rav Meir holds that people eat more at Shabbos meals because of the tastiness of the food, whereas Rav Yehuda holds that people eat less at Shabbos meals because they eat three seudos on Shabbos. Rav Yosef asked Rav Yosef Breda Rabba, whose view does his father accept? And he answered that Rabba accepted Rabbi Meir's opinion of weekday meals. Rav Yosef said that he too accepts Rabbi Meir's opinion, for if one accepted Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that a Shabbos meal is smaller than a weekday meal, then there's difficulty with the popular saying, "Rav chol b'sima shchiach." It, referring to the stomach, leaves room for a tasty dish, which lends credence to the notion that people eat more on Shabbos because of the tastiness of the food. Daf Pei Beis. So the Simmer Daf Pei Beis is a pub. So here goes. The pub owner was outraged that the Eruv Tchumim setup committee forgot to inform him about the existence of the Eruv, after his wife participated with her 5-year-old child in mind, bringing two small weekday meals that tasted quite bland. Once again in slow motion. The pub owner, that must be more in Daf Pei Beis. The pub owner was outraged that the Eruv Tchumim setup committee forgot to inform him about the existence of the Eruv, which reminds us that Rav Ashi explained that the ruling that the Eruv must be accepted while it's still day does not imply in Brera. There's no retroactive clarification because the Mishnah was distinguishing between Hodi'uhu below Hodi'uhu, a case where the makers of the Erev informed him of the existence of the Erev and where they did not inform him. Rashi explains that Brera can only retroactively clarify when the potential for clarification existed. In this case, the person had no knowledge of the Erev until Shabbos began. So the pub owner was outraged that a Ruvi Tchumin setup committee forgot to inform him about the existence of the Erev. After his wife participated with her 5-year-old child of mine, which reminds us that Rav Asi said, Katan ben Shesh Yotzi be'erev imo. A child, even in the 6th year, can fulfill his obligation to make an Erev with his mother's Erev. Rashi explains that she doesn't need to formally give the child ownership of the Erev, as the child is considered a part of her, and it's assumed that she had the child in mind, since he can't be without her. So the pub owner was outraged that the Eruvi Tchumin Setup Committee forgot to inform him about the existence of the Erev, after his wife participated with her 5-year-old child in mind, bringing 2 small weekday meals that tasted quite bland. Which reminds us that the amount of food necessary to set up the Erev is mazon shtei seudos kol echad v'echad, food for 2 meals for each and every person who wants to participate in the Erev. And that it's malchus for Meir and Rabbi Yehuda whether the meals were weekday or Shabbos meals. Rabbi Meir holds weekday meals are smaller because people eat more on Shabbos because the meals are tastier. And Rabbi Yehuda holds Shabbos meals are smaller because people save room to eat 3 meals. So once again, the pub owner was outraged that the Aruvi Tchumim Setup Committee forgot to inform him about the existence of the Erev, after his wife participated with her 5-year-old child in mind, bringing 2 small weekday meals that tasted quite bland. Alright, now it's time for Four Blah Ba Chazara. Daf Ein Ches. So the symbol Ein Ches is a child going ugh. So here goes. The mischievous kid who went ugh when he saw the bowl of spinach, child going ugh, that must be more than Daf Ein Ches. The mischievous kid who went ugh when he saw the bowl of spinach, balanced it on a 3-tefachim peg stuck in a post, which reminds us, Rav Huna said, Amud Bushas of Rabin Gavo Asar of Rochav Arba, if a post that is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, thereby constituting a Rishus Yachid, stands in Rishus of Rabim, Venatz Bo Yasin Koshahu, and one wedged a peg of any size into the top of the post, the peg reduces some of the top surface area, rendering it a Makom Patur. The Gemara presents 3 interpretations of Rav Huna's ruling. Rav Ada Bar Ava said, Ugavo Shlosha, and the peg must be 3 tefachim high. Rashi explains that if it's not 3 tefachim, it's considered part of the top surface. Abai and Rabba both said, Afo Pisha Ein Gavoa Shlosha. Even though the peg is not 3 tefachim high, it still renders the top of the post Makom Patur, since that part of the surface where the peg was put is not usable. Ravashi disagreed with both interpretations and said, Afio Shigavoa Shlosha Tefachim. Even if the peg is 3 tefachim high, it doesn't render the top of the post Makom Patur because it's possible to hang something onto the peg. Rashi explains that since the peg performs a function of the post, it's considered as part of the post and not something that detracts from it. So the mischievous kid went ugh when he saw the bowl of spinach, balanced it on a 3-tefachim peg stuck in a post, then booby-trapped the ladders to get it by placing straw rungs in the middle. Which reminds us, Rabbi Yosef asked Rabbi what the halach is if one placed 2 ladders against the wall, each one less than 2 tefachim wide, and he put straw in the middle, which Rashi explains to mean that he presses straw into the shape of rungs and connect them to each ladder. Do we regard the ladders as having the requisite width of 4 tefachim? Rabbi answered, Ein kafarego olbehen. The ball of the foot cannot go up on them, since one usually steps on the middle part of the rung. Therefore, the straw rungs are not a valid extension. Rabbi Yosef then asked what the halach is if one affixed straw rungs on either side of a narrow ladder, and Rabbi responded, kafarego olbehen. The ball of the foot can go up on them, and therefore the straw rungs are a valid extension. So the mischievous kid went, ugh, when he saw the bowl of spinach, balanced it on a 3-tefachim peg stuck in a post, then booby-trapped the ladders to get it by placing straw rungs in the middle, and required climbing up on an asherah tree. Which reminds us, Rav Yosef asks, Asu le'ilan suam mahu, what's the halacha if one made a tree into a ladder? Is the tree considered a pesach, which allows the 2 chatzeros to join in the mutual erev, even though one may not climb a tree on Shabbos? He then asks that if we rule that an ordinary tree can indeed serve as a ladder to be an erev, what's the halacha if one made an asherah tree into a ladder? Since one gets hanah from the erev chatzeros, would it be permissible to use it? Rabbi answered that the tree is mutter and the asherah is aser. The Ritva explains that since it's permitted to use the tree as a pesach during the week, we view the Shabbos challenge as incidental and it doesn't affect the tree legal status as a pesach. Rabbi Yochanan said, and there are those that say that Rabbi Lezer said, Koshe iser Shabbos gorem lo aser. The tree which cannot be climbed because of Hilchos Shabbos is aser, but the asherah which cannot be used for a non-Shabbos related reason is mutter. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak presents a third answer. Daf Ein Tes. So the Simra Ein Tes is an 8, a pen, and we use a sofer with a quill. So here goes. The distracted sofer who tripped over a ditch filled with pebbles dropped his quill. Sofer and quill, that must be one Daf Ein Tes. The distracted sofer who tripped over a ditch filled with pebbles, which reminds us, the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Ein Ches on the base state that if a ditch between 2 chatzeros that was 10 tefachim deep and four tefachim wide was filled with earth and pebbles, the two chetzeros must join in one common erev and not make two separate erevs. The Gemara says that this implies that afilo b'stama, even without the owner of the earth and pebbles stating intent that he wants to leave the earth and pebbles there, we view the ditch as if it's permanently filled. This contradicts the Mishnah in Olos that teaches that a house filled with straw or rocks is only considered filled if one specifically intends to leave them there permanently. Three answers were given. Rav Asi answered that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi, with whom the Tana in Olos disagrees. Rav Huna Breda Rav Shua said that we cannot compare Tuma to Shabbos, as people would even abandon a wallet for the duration of Shabbos, since it's Moksa, but are less likely to abandon something because of Tuma. Rav Ashi answered that people are more likely to be mevatel something in a ditch, as it's normal to fill in, than in the house, it's not normal to fill in. So the distracted sofer who tripped over a ditch filled with pebbles dropped his quill in a haystack separating two chatzeros, which reminds us, mas ben sheben shtei chatzeros gevoa sor tefachim, of a haystack between two chatzeros is ten tefachim, ma'arvin shnai ve'ein ma'arvin echad. The resonance may make two independent eruvs, but may not make one eruv. El ma'achilin mekan ve'el ma'achilin mekan. The resonance of the chatzeros may feed their animals from here, meaning the haystack, and so may the other residents. Rashi explains that we're not concerned that their animals will eat so much straw that the height of the haystack will shrink below 10 tefachim, causing the chatzeros to merge and prohibit caring. Rafuna said regarding feeding the livestock, as long as the owner doesn't put straw in his basket to feed the animals. Rashi explains that the reason that this is forbidden is either because he might take too much and reduce the height of the mechitza, or because the straw is muksa. So the distracted sofer who tripped over a ditch filled with pebbles dropped his quill in a haystack separating two chatzeros, while knocking over an Eved Ivri holding a barrel, a tefach, off the ground. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Ketsa mishtatfin b'mavui, how do we make a shitu for a mavui? So one places a barrel containing food and declares, let this belong to all the residents of the mavui, umazakalahen, and he may confer ownership to them through his adult son, daughter, or through Jewish servants, or his wife. Rav Yudah said, chavi shal shitufa imavos, sarich lahagbi aminakarka, tefach. The barrel that's being used for shitufa imavos must be lifted at least one tefach off the ground, otherwise it remains in the domain and control of its owner. Daf pei. So the simmer daf pei is a payday, or a person with wads full of cash in the pockets. Here goes. The pompous neighbor with wads full of cash in his pockets. Wads full of cash in his pockets? That must be run daf pei. The pompous neighbor with wads full of cash in his pockets didn't want to contribute to the shitif, despite his neighbors. So his wife came along and without his consent, which reminds us, the Gemara discusses whether a reluctant resident can be forcibly included in the erev or shitif. There was a Nachri who guarded over the town's weapons in Rabbi Zer's neighborhood, refused to lease his rights to the residents in his chatzar, prohibiting them from caring. They came to Rabbi Zer, who told them that Reish Lakish said in the name of Chanina, a person's wife may join her family in an erev by contributing her husband's food even without his consent. Shmuel said that similarly, if one regularly contributes to the shita but one week doesn't want to participate out of spite in order to prevent the residents from caring, the residents of that mavui may enter his home and forcibly take a sheet of contribution from him with his wife's permission, according to Tosfos. So the pompous neighbor with wads full of cash in his pockets didn't want to contribute to the sheetuf, despite his neighbors. So his wife came along and, without his consent, added enough food to the diminished sheetuf, which reminds us. The next Mishnah states, Nismait ha'ochel, if the sheetuf food became diminished from the required amount before the onset of Shabbos, mostly from Mazakim, one may add his own food to complete the required amount and confer ownership upon the other residents, Vein Sarach Lahodia, and he doesn't need to notify them, even if he uses their food. Rashi explains that even though the residents must approve of their food for the Shitav, consent isn't needed in this case, since they've already approved of the Shitav. The Mishnah continues, Nitosvel then, if more residents were added to the original residents, so that the Shitav food is insufficient for all the residents, Mosif Mazaka Vesarach Lahodia, then one may add his own food to reach the required amount and confer ownership to the new residents, but he must notify them and solicit their approval if he desires to use their food. Rashi explains that all the residents must be permitted to eat any of the shita food. So the pompous neighbor with wads full of cash in his pockets didn't want to contribute to the shita, despite his neighbors. So his wife came along and, without his consent, added enough food to the diminished shita for 18 residents. Which reminds us, the Mishnah states that the measure of food that must be contributed to the shita, vizmanche merubim, when the residents are numerous, is mazun shtei seudos l'chulam, provisions equivalent to two meals for one person. When there are few, it's food equivalent to the volume of a dried fig for each one of the residents. Rav Yossi said, "Bemed var mamurim, when are these rules of measurement stated? But chilz erev, regarding the inception of the erev, when it's originally made, avo bishiyari erev koshu, but with regards to the remnants of the erev, any amount is sufficient, and the food need not be replenished for the upcoming Shabbosim." Rav Yossi disagrees with the Tanakhama, who said the food must be replenished. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel that 18 residents or more qualify as numerous. Daf Pei Aleph. So the symbol of Pei Aleph is a grandpa. So here goes. The grumpy grandpa. Grumpy grandpa. That must mean we're on Daf Pei Aleph. The grumpy grandpa who complained when a neighbor brought him a broken loaf of bread to join the Erev, which reminds us, the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Pei Aleph Beis stated that according to Rabbi Eliezer, b'chol ma'arvi mishtadfin chutz min ha'mayim min ha'melech, any food may be used to make an Erev or shittiv except water and salt. Rabbi Yeshua said, kikar hu Erev. Only a whole loaf of bread is valid as an Erev. Even if a loaf that is baked from a saw of flour is slightly broken, it may not be used, whereas a loaf the size of an Isser, as long as it's whole, may be used as an Erev. Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul said in the name of Rebbe that the reason for Rabbi Yeshua's ruling is Mishum Eva, because of ill will. Rashi explains that the residents who contributed whole loaves might complain to those who contributed only broken loaves. Rav Ashi explained to Rav Acha Breid Rava that even if all the residents contributed only broken loaves, Rabbi Yeshua would not approve because Shema Yachzer Davul Kukulo. Perhaps the situation will revert to its problematic state that people become accustomed to donate broken loaves even when others donate whole loaves. So the grumpy grandpa who complained when a neighbor brought him a broken loaf of bread to join the Erev while he was waiting in the long line to pay the butcher Erev Shabbos, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that according to Rabbi Eliezer, Nosen Adam Malachem Vini Lenachtem Kadei Sheyizkalo Erev, a person may give a mat to a grocer or baker so that the grocer or baker can confer upon him ownership in the Erev or Shittiv made from the grocer's wine and the baker's loaf of bread, whereas according to the Chachamim, Lezachu L'Ma'osav, his money does not acquire a share of the Erev for him. The Gemara asks how Rabbi Eliezer could permit payment alone. How L'Mashach, he didn't do Mashicha and bring the food into his possession, which is a Rabban requirement to acquire an object. Rav Nachman said in the name of Rabbi Bar Avahu, also, Rabbi Eliezer Ka'arba Prakim Rishon. Rabbi Eliezer treated this matter like the case of four seasons of the year. The Gemara cites a Mishnah Chulin that enumerates the four busiest days of the year for butchers as the days before Shmini Atzeres, Pesach, Shavuos, and Rosh Hashanah. The Rabban waived the necessity for Mashiach on these days because of these special circumstances. Rashi explains that Rabbi Eliezer rules that in this case of Erev, the Rabban also waived the need for Mashiach to facilitate making the Erev because it's for Shabbos. So the grumpy grandpa who complained when a neighbor brought him a broken loaf of bread to join the Erev while he was waiting in the long line to pay the butcher Erev Shavuos, got insulted when someone else gave him money for the Erev and asked him to act as his shaliach. Which reminds us, the mission continues, Modim Chachamim B'Shar Kol Adam Shezachu Ma'osav. The Chachamim concur that in regard to all their people who are not merchants, to whom the resident gave money with which to acquire for him a portion of the Erev, that his money acquires for him ownership in a portion of the Erev food. Rashi explains that when the person says, obtain for me a possession in the Erev, his intent is different. Since ordinary people do not sell loaves of bread, he intended to merely appoint the other person to act as his shaliach, where the money is being provided for the service rather than payment for the loaf of bread. In the case of the grocer, if the person had instructed him to make an Erev for him, the Erev would be valid. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos and Shabbos. Number 1, which daf do we learn that a wife can contribute to a shittiv on behalf of the family without the consent from her husband? That's on daf. Pei. Good. Number 2, which daf do we learn that it's assumed that a mother has a mind to include her 5-year-old child in the Erev? That's on daf. Pei Beis. Good. Number 3, which daf do we learn that Rabbi Eliezer allows a resident to pay the grocer or baker without doing mashicha, just like they permit it in specific days when butchers are busiest? That's on daf. Pei Aleph. Good. Number 4, which daf do we learn that straw rungs placed between two narrow ladders does not extend the length of the rungs to give the ladders the status of a pesach? That's on daf. Ein Ches. Good. Number 5, which daf do we learn that Malkokas Rabbi Yehuda reviewed whether the two meals required to make the Erev are the size of weekday meals or Shabbos meals? That's on daf. Pei Beis. Good. Number 6, which daf do we learn what to do if the shita became diminished before the onset of Shabbos? That's on daf. Pei. Good. Number 7, which daf do we have a three-way Malkokas regarding a peg that was wedged into the top of a post that was 10 by 4 tefachim, whether it makes it a Makumpatur? That's on daf. Ein Ches. Good. Number 8, which daf do we learn the amount of food that must be contributed for a shittiv when there are 18 or more residents? That's on daf. Pei. Good. Number 9, which daf do we learn the Rav Ashi explains that if one was not informed about the making of the Erev, then Brera wouldn't work if he found out after Shabbos began? That's on daf. Pei Beis. Good. And number 10, which daf do we learn that the Chachamim agree that a resident can give a neighbor money to acquire a portion of the Erev since his intent is to make him a shaliach? That's on daf. Pay off. Good. Now the 3 bonus questions. Number 1, which daf do we learn about Seitz HaKochavim? That's on daf. Laman Hay and Shabbos. Good. Number 2, which daf do we learn that making a bracha rishona is based on Svara? That's on daf. Lamed Hey and Brachas. Good. Number three, which daf do you learn that one can be chayv for writing with his right or left hand if he's proficient in both? That's on daf. Kuf Kimon Shabbos. Excellent. All right, that concludes our pop quiz. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman. Zichu, wishing you a great day and great learning.